Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Daily Intermission Podcast, Season 3, Episode 57. Greg in studio, JP, Justin Paul from New York. Justin, how was the weekend, my man?
Hey, not as much golf. The weather wasn't as nice, but you know what? Perfect time to sit down, catch every game you can of the playoffs, so can't complain here. Hey, we got a lot of great things to talk about in the sports world, so it wasn't too bad right now this time of year to be sitting inside. How was yours?
Oh, man, it was phenomenal. Went into the city and actually had a huge Saturday. Went for a nice run on Saturday morning, played 9 holes of golf, went to the NLL, the National Lacrosse League in Halifax, two of my buddies. I'll tell you kind of the connection here. So I played junior hockey and did my undergrad with a good friend of mine. We're obviously still really close. And then when I was doing my master's degree, I was best buddies with another guy, and they're both beer reps for Molson Coors in Halifax. So they didn't really know each other beforehand. Now they're great friends, and obviously I'm a mutual connection of the both of them. So whenever I go into the big city of Halifax, they take care of me, and obviously they've got some serious perks for working with Molson and Coors. And yeah, so we were in the Molson Coors box for the NHL game, and then we went to the sports bar, the big sports bar in Halifax, to watch the Leafs, end of the Leafs game, which we'll get into. Just an incredible finish there on Saturday night. So it was a great night. I paid for it on Sunday. But needless to say, it was a good weekend. But before we get into things, Justin, the pregame show, I have to say that this episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Calling all men, it's time to mind your manholes with Manscaped. Everyone's aware by now that nose hairs are a major turnoff. That's why Manscaped upgraded their brand new Weed Whacker 2.0. With improved blades and motors, you can feel the power of those nasty nose hairs being annihilated in the palm of your hands. The improved Weed Whacker can now be found in their Performance 4.0 package with no additional cost. Save money and attack your nose hairs, ear hairs, by going to manscaped.com, using the code TDI for 20% off, free shipping. All right, you ready to get into this, Justin? We have a lot to get into because obviously the playoffs are alive and well. We've got a lot of series coming at us each night, but we're starting things off in quarter one here in the NHL. And we'll start things off in the Carolina Hurricanes, New York Islanders series. And there's been a lot of complaints. Obviously, the New York Islanders have a very noisy fan base. And we talked about it in game two with the overtime, the high-sticking call. But the Islanders dominate game three at home. That building was electric. They ended up grabbing a big win at home. But it was all Carolina in game four. That series is now tied up. Any pointers, anything you're catching from that series? I thought the Islanders were going to be, more of a threat in this series, and especially too in that pre-playoff kind of episode that we did. But it's been all Hurricanes really so far.
Yeah, and I mean, we had the preview, and I took Islanders in this series. But you know what? It's the one seed in the Metro against the wild cards, number one seed. So you know what? We shouldn't be too surprised at this gap. But I think the big part for me that's surprising, I think it's a little bit more going forward in this playoffs than it is to analyze the last game or two of this one, is the big part about the Islanders beating the Carolina Hurricanes, or some people were maybe thinking that they could push this series deep, was the injuries on Carolina.
Yep.
And I think what we got to look at going forward is, man, can these Hurricanes play this way against any team without these top guys in lineup? Or is this just the Islanders aren't the team to be able to handle them no matter who's in or out? And it's a situation where we kind of overestimated them. You know what I mean? I mean, I got to ask you the question, like, what do we see here from the Hurricanes in this series? That do you see something that you think that they could beat the Rangers or the Devils next series when they meet them? Or is this kind of just something where they're taking out a wildcard team that barely got into the playoffs, but it's not all too impressive for me, and we don't think they're getting past the next one, or am I wrong there?
Man, I think the Hurricanes are a handful. I really do. And obviously, we probably didn't give them enough credit pre-series, but I talk about that kind of that brand of hockey, and I always resort back to that game versus the Leafs. I know it was a few years ago when David Ayers was in Nets, but they just have that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, and even with Svechnikov in that lineup, and I'm not going to include Max Pacioretty in that conversation because we really didn't see mm-hmm. him in that lineup.
Yeah.
I think we saw a couple weeks of him, but even without Svechnikov, I mean, they don't have the names that jump off the page, but they've got such an excellent decor, and Antti Raanta maybe doesn't get the flowers he deserves. He was 19-3-3 in the regular season, and just Rod Brendamore just knows how to bring those guys to war, and they play team hockey. They know how to shut things down and not give you very much offensively, and just play such a structured defensive style. I mean, I do like the game that they've shown so far, and I do think that they could compete with any team. I mean, they have all year long. They were the number two seed behind the best regular season, the number two just overall in the NHL this year. And yeah, I mean, I think that they obviously this series isn't done yet. Being up 3-1 they're in a great position to win. I do think they'll punch their ticket in the next couple games, especially heading home up 3-1. But yeah, I do like their brand of hockey, and they play gritty, and I know there's going to be a lot of arguments with the reffing and so what, but in the end, it's 3-1 Hurricanes, and I do believe that whoever comes out of that Devils Rangers series is it's not going to be a walk in the park playing the Carolina Hurricanes. That is for sure.
No, absolutely. I don't think you're too wrong. I mean, you just wonder. I mean, I do think the Islanders have been in these games. Like I said, I think the first two games were something they could have stolen, especially game two there. So it could be a 2-2 series. But, I mean, that's playoff hockey too, being able to get the bounces and capitalize on the situation. So, yeah, you got to give Carolina credit. They're extremely well coached, like you said. So either way, can't wait for that next round with Carolina and whoever comes out of that New Jersey, New York series. So, but I think this one's wrapped up for sure for Carolina right now.
Okay, yeah. No chance for the Islanders, but we'll see. I mean, I'm excited. Maybe a hot Sorokin for a couple games, but I think you're right, man. All indicators show that Carolina will be moving on. But let's move into the next series. Another 3-1 series. The Boston Bruins go on the road to Florida without their two top centermen. So let me ask you, Justin, how many hockey teams in the NHL can go without their 1-2 centermen and take down two road games in the NHL? I will say not very many.
No, not many at all, and it's impressive. And I mean, like you said, you talk about the top two centermen being out, but it's like, okay, they're gone, but you got Hull here putting up 4 points, and he's got 7 in the series. You got Pasternak, Marchand's looking vintage self, like always in the playoffs. So, I mean, it just they are showing that they're still the team that they showed all regular season. It's going to be something where, again, I just wonder, is this like, what's up with Bergeron? Like what's going on there in terms of like long-term for this playoff run? Is it something where we're going to see this the whole run? Is it something where he's going to be fully healthy at all? Like what do you think and what are you hearing? What's your mindset with that situation?
Yeah, he's not a guy I'm too worried about. I know it's an elbow injury, or from all reports, it's an elbow injury. And I think they're obviously taking precaution and giving him as much time as possible. But let's not forget that this guy played with 5 broken ribs and a collapsed lung in the 2011 playoff run when they won the Cup. So, I mean, this guy's tough as nails. I'm not sure what's going on with David Krejci. I'm hoping it's all precautionary and we'll see what that lineup looks like. But all I know is that when he gets inserted back into that lineup, look out. It's like that team plays differently with Patrice Bergeron. He is the heart and soul of that team. He kind of puts everyone in a more comfortable position, but you said it perfectly. The depth of this team is just being showcased at its highest level. I mean, Taylor Hall missed a lot of the second half of the season. He's got 6 points in the last 2 games on the road in Florida. Unbelievable. One thing I'm a little disappointed with, or one thing that kind of takes away from the atmosphere of playoff hockey, is when they were in FLA Live Arena. Like, you go to these arenas around the league, say MSG or in Toronto and in Boston, you're talking about probably 98% of the fans in that building are cheering for the home team. You go to FLA Live, it doesn't feel like a playoff atmosphere. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a lot of Boston Bruins fans there. It's almost like a 60-40 in terms of Florida-Boston fans. So it didn't feel amazing to watch, but the Bruins, they just looked fantastic. And I'm curious, so Linus Allmark last night, there was a bit of a scuffle up when they were up.
Yeah.
And he threw a blocker at Matthew Tkachuk. I know that earlier in the year, was it Binnington who threw a blocker, got a game suspension? Because I guess in the rule book, if you throw a blocker punch, it is a 1-game suspension. So that'll be interesting to see. Is Linus Allmark going to be suspended? Obviously, Jeremy Swayman's going to be fantastic regardless. He's a great young goaltender in the NHL, but that could be worth noting moving forward and into the next game in Boston. Is Allmark going to be available for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. I mean, the blocker situation, that's the big rule with the goalies, is the blocker, a little bit with the stick stuff. So we'll have to see. Swayman will be able to get this job done either way. But just to touch back on like the depth you said, I think the big piece for people to understand with the depth of this Boston team, it's about their depth and their talent, et cetera, but it's their depth's experience. Like a lot of teams that are still successful in the playoffs and regular season, they have like good young guys coming into the lineup, inserting energy, being able to keep that fast pace. Obviously these skaters are coming in better and better, but like not many teams have the experience depth that a team like this Bruins have. And you see it on the blue line. Like they added that they have Carlo and Forbert and McAvoy, but then they add Orlov on the blue line. And now you just absolutely loaded with guys who have been there, done that. In one the playoffs. Cup. So
yeah,
like, yeah, exactly. And that the difference that makes for me is I feel like through the long run of the playoffs, these guys could all play with everyone in the NHL, the top teams. But it's when guys get hurt, it's when guys get banged up, that's where the experience and the depth shows. It's the difference between, yeah, these young guys on say, Toronto, et cetera, they could play against anyone on third, fourth lines. It's about, can these guys step up into a line two or a line one role in the conference finals because someone goes down? And that's what Boston has that not many teams do. So, yeah, I mean, hey, the president's winners thing is still looming around, and we got a lot of playoffs to go. But I think it's safe to say, I think you'd agree, round one taken care of, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this thing gets wrapped up in Boston on Tuesday night. So we'll see, though. And they look fantastic, obviously, being a Bruins fan. And obviously that narrative that we're bringing is a tad biased due to the fact that I'm a Boston fan. But I'm enjoying what I'm seeing. And like I said, I mean, you know, what a testament to the depth. Being down your two top centermen, you go around the league. And I know that they may not be the biggest superstars that they were at one point during their careers, but you know, if you're without 1-2 in the center, I mean, how many teams are going to get it done twice on the road? Not many. All right, let's move into the Toronto Maple Leafs Tampa Bay Lightning series. And what a treat this was on Saturday night. What a game this was. Back and forth, just a bunch of, you know, fights. Matthews gets his first career fight, which I'll throw an asterisk on that. Not much of a fight. I mean, it was more anyway. That we can get into that as well. But late in the game, they pull the goalie. Ryan O'Reilly ties the game up, goes to overtime. Morgan Rielly with a cheeky little short side snipe off the faceoff. The Leafs take game three, which is just a huge win. You know, what did you take away from Saturday night? What an incredible game that was.
Yeah, so first things first, you mentioned the O'Reilly goal at the end of the game. And you know what? Just the O'Reilly game. He had 3 points last game. He's got 5 points in three games in the series. And I said it last time on the pod, and it showed again. Like, this is what they were looking for the last 3 years. And I have a little bit of an issue with, again, not with Leafs haters to a degree. I went in maybe a little bit on Leafs fans last pod. This one's Leafs haters. Like, I have these conversations about Leafs curse to a degree in the first round. That's no secret. Everyone knows that in the NHL. And they keep talking about, yeah, but some teams or some cores just aren't built to win the first round. This Leafs team that lost in round one have lost to top two teams in the playoffs every year. It's the divisional setup. It's how it goes. They play Tampa or Boston in round one. They can't control that because it's how the division goes. It's not 1-8 anymore. Like, but they've added pieces at the deadline that haven't worked out. And that's not on that core of Matthews, Marner, Tavares, O'Reilly, etc. Like, they added a piece at the deadline that is becoming, or it has become, a top two player for them, a leader for them, a guy who's willing to do the gritty playoff work. He's laying down to block a shot at the end of the period. Guy's got no visor on his helmet. He don't care. Like, that's the kind of piece they added, and it's working out phenomenally for them. I have trouble just sitting on what's happened in the past with this Leafs team because, man, like they've shown that Ryan O'Reilly might be that little piece of grit and playoff experience that they needed because he's humming right now and he's a big part of the success of playing a team like Tampa who's got all that experience and who's been there and done that. So, like, I think that this Leafs team's different, man. Again, I know we're 2-2 and we're going back to Toronto, but I think they might be for real. I really do. And when I say for real, I'm not saying cup, but they're going to make noise. I really think so.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think as you travel on in the playoffs and what we've seen from the past, I mean, your odds just get better and better to win the cup. I mean, there's less of a major favorite, and it's like you got to battle out a 7-game war. And really, you know, it is a bit of a coin flip once you get, you know, down to it, and once you, you know, kind of continue on in these rounds. But like you said, I mean, I do feel the same way. I feel like the Leafs just feel a little bit differently this year. You know, that Ryan O'Reilly addition has just been so fantastic, and that's different in the past. I mean, we think about the additions that they've made in the past, like Nick Foligno, you know, is a guy that they brought in a few years ago, but he hadn't won a cup. He didn't win a Conn Smythe trophy.
No.
You know, he hadn't been there and done it. Ryan O'Reilly has. And, you know, we think about Noel Acciari. He's been on runs with the Boston Bruins in the past. And, you know, it just feels like this team is a bit different. And you know, to win that game and Kyle Dubas yelling at the Tampa Bay fans from the press box, things just feel a little different for this team. And obviously we'll see tonight. Tonight will be a major indicator if they're willing to bury the Tampa Bay Lightning or if they're going to let them hang around and make a best of 2 out of 3 series. So tonight will be very telling for the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is a big, big game. If they can come out and make a statement, get on the board early, get rough and tough with them, get people involved, you know, take the Tampa Bay's life right out of them because they have the opportunity to do that tonight. And in the past, this is where they let teams hang around and make things a little bit longer series than it should be. So this is a real opportunity tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs to really make a statement. And wouldn't that Toronto-Boston series just give every hockey fan what they need this time of year?
Absolutely. I couldn't wait for that. But I think we got to mention it quick, but that hit on point. I mean,
yes, let's get into it.
That was everywhere. That was everywhere on Twitter and everything. And obviously the Leafs fan base had their opinion, and Tampa fan base was obviously on the other side of that. Like, again, I made a quick video of it. I know you saw it. Like,
yep.
What did you think of it, obviously, of the hit? I know what I felt of it, but I just wanted to get, what was your gut reaction maybe? And then where do you stand now?
I didn't think it was that bad, to be honest with you. It felt like that point maybe caught an edge going into the corner. Obviously, they braced with contact, and I don't think Riley was malicious, you know, with the contact. He was just kind of bracing for the boards, and I think it was just a little bit of bad luck by Braden Point by catching an edge, kind of dropping to a knee, and then obviously, you know, both going at high speed. I like your point that I think potentially boarding could have been the call there. You know, none of them were going for the puck. So, you know, there was a bit of contact there, potentially interference. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there was malicious. And obviously, you know, when a player of that caliber for a team, takes a hit, that is potentially a penalty, especially a team like Tampa Bay, they're going to respond in the way they did. And I was a little disappointed with Steven Stamkos. I mean, you got Matthews, who we know is a little bit on the softer end of things. I mean, he has never fought in the NHL. He's picking up sticks. And then Stamkos goes over, grabs him, and starts suckering him with left hands. I don't love that from a guy like Steven Stamkos. Yep. But obviously, you know, Matthews, you know, did his thing and kept his gloves on and scratched at him like a cat. So nice to see from a guy like Austin Matthews. They'll chalk it up as your first career fight. But all in all, man, I don't think there was anything. There was no malicious intent behind the hit. But Morgan Riley, a guy, what a huge series that guy's having. And he was a punching bag for Leafs fans all season long. You know, really hasn't been himself, it seems like, for a long time. But is he ever playing well? And he's stepping up in this first round. It's nice to see. It's refreshing to see. And I'm not a Leafs fan by any means. I'm actually the opposite. You know, I've been a Leafs hater for a long time. But it is refreshing to see a team that you've expected to be at the position they're at for so many years, you know, kind of getting it done. But again, it all comes down to tonight. Can they get it done and really, you know, put the nail in the coffin?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, the point hit was something where it looked a lot worse than it was. Crazy. I think just crazy overall that Leafs come out of there with a power play. Not that that's the wrong call.
I know.
The flow of the game, that was nuts that after all that to come out of the power play. But, no, I completely agree. We were watching the game here. We had like 9 or 10 of us watching the game. And I said, as soon as that hit happened, I go, OT winner is going to be Riley a point. Ended up being Riley tipped in from point on his own net. So you can't write it any other way. But no, we'll see. Yeah, no, I completely agree with everything you had there. So, yeah, the game in Toronto, that's the big one. I think they get it done. I think that's my prediction for this game is at least win it. But you never know, I guess. So we'll see.
I'm with you. And I feel as if this one may not even be a close one. I think the Leafs could dominate tonight, you know, win a 4-5-2 game here. But let's go to the final series here in the Eastern Conference. We've got the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers. Obviously, the Rangers put a beating on the Devils in the first two games on the road, winning both 5-1. But the New Jersey Devils step up in game three. Dougie Hamilton gets the OT winner. A massive win for the Devils. Just what a jolt of confidence to put into that group, that young team that hasn't been there. And a lot of people, a lot of the media, even us, you know, we were all over the Rangers going, this team looks for real. But the Devils say, wait a minute, you know, we can hang around in this series. They get that huge win at MSG. Is there any chance that the Devils can win again tonight and get right back in this thing?
So I gotta lean that there is a chance, and it's only from one guy and one decision made by Lindy Ruff there. Schmid in the net, man. Like, this is for real. I have some guys here around me that big goaltending advanced stats. We've got the goalies on our team that follow it like crazy for their own stuff, and they were all over Schmid all regular season. They're big on him as soon as he got announced coming in. And this is a guy with a 2.13 in the regular season, a 0.922. Like, and he goes out there and he has 35 saves on 36 shots, and he shuts down this Rangers offense. And how can I sit here and say that the Devils are out of it down one game? I know I look maybe a little bit of a pie on my face after calling the series done before, but they weren't going with Schmid beforehand, and I think that was a big part of it. And now we sit here, they got to pull off one more win in New York. And a few things that make that a factor that I think they can get it done is they've had a little bit of playoff experience here. Nerves are settled. They're in game. They're in game four going into New York. So they've settled the nerves. They have taken a few licks here by the Rangers. They're like, okay, you know what? We're in a no lose situation now. We're down 2-0, and we're just in a spot to maybe pull off a comeback. If not, everyone wrote us off anyways. They got a little bit of swagger now. Dougie Hamilton with the OT winner. And this team was legit through the regular season and played with this Rangers team for the regular season. Like, I can't say that they're out. We say they're out of the series. It's whether or not they win the next game. That's what we're talking about. And all we're really talking about is who's your pick for game four. And you know what? Like, I might ride Schmid in the hot hand. Like, we've seen this with Matt Murray's in Pittsburgh. Like, Halak with Montreal, we talk about. Like, we've seen it too many times, and the reason I'm okay with doing it is because the Devils roster in front of him is legit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not doing this with, say, Florida against Boston or Islanders or whatever. Like, this is a team that absolutely could beat this Rangers team. I'm going to say that this series is far from over. I mean, it still went to OT, but I don't know. Do you feel the same way? This Schmid kid, man.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I was on the Devils pre-series, yeah. I'm happy to see that I'm not looking like a complete idiot, but yeah, I love the goaltending change, and I mean, this is, like you said, like, what meaningful hockey we have tonight, and not saying that not every game's meaningful, but I mean, these are two almost series-deciding games tonight in the Leafs and Lightning series. I mean, you know, both teams have the opportunity to put the nail in the coffin, or at least put the teams on the ropes with the Rangers and Leafs. But, you know, you can get two teams right back in these things if the Lightning and Devils can win. Yeah. So those are going to be super exciting games to watch. I'm fired up for it. Let's move out west, Justin, because the Minnesota Wild and Dallas Stars, they're all notched up. The Wild go home, absolutely buzzed during game three, get the win 5-1, and then Dallas last night responds. So this game is looking like it's probably going to go seven games. You know, big response last night from the Stars to win 3-2 on the road, but they're heading back to Dallas tied. Thankfully, the Wild have gone back to Philip Gustafson. Still not really, I'm not sure what was going through their heads in game two. And hopefully that's not, an error to come, at the end of the series. Because if we look back and think, okay, well, if they would have went with Gustafson in game two, who knows if they could have got that 2-0, series lead heading home, could be a completely different series.
And I completely agree. I mean, you got to go. Gustafson's going the rest of the way. If that's not the case, I mean, it would just be absolutely lunacy. But this is a goalie war. And it's crazy to say that when we're talking about goalie controversy in Minnesota. But when Gustafson and Nett, this is a goaltending battle. And it's going to be tough to predict going forward. Like, I can't say I'm leaning either way. I don't know if you can, because I look at two things for me as I'm trying to pick a side here. Like, okay, Seguin gets two goals. Great to have a piece like that going. That's experience that you need to get hot. And as much as he has been showing his age in the regular season, he's not leading the league in points, etc. Like, those are guys that have experience that can score big goals throughout a playoff run, no matter what their age is. So that's huge for me that Sagan's going. And then Roope Hintz has 8 points through four games, which allows guys like Jason Robertson, who really is the offensive engine of this team, to get going. The fact that Roope Hintz is buzzing and you're in a 2-2 series and Jason Robertson could still absolutely go off, like, that's huge. But then I look the other side and I say to myself, okay, well, we're in a 2-2 series, but they started Fleury, so there goes the game. And Kaprizov's got 1 point in four games. Like, for me, I worry that Wild have themselves in a tie series when they're not playing their best hockey. So for me, that's a big part of it. And then we got to talk about it. What do you think? The penalty on Foligno there late gave Dallas the power play. He's like, you don't have to talk about this game alone. Like, what do you think of the reffing? Like, it's become so prevalent in so many games, and it's always going to be like that in the playoffs. But, like, it just, there's something with NHL hockey and refereeing that just don't seem to go well every year.
Yeah, I talked about this a lot about this during the Super Bowl and after the Super Bowl. You know, I'm a big proponent that, you know, when we get into the NHL playoffs and, you know, the NBA playoffs and the NFL playoffs, you know, we want these referees to be as hands-off as possible. We want these games to be played out 5-on-5 and let the best team win. Because the refs, you know, if you're making penalty calls and if you're throwing flags and if you're making, you know, foul calls, you can dictate a lot of the play and really, you know, take teams out of rhythm, put teams on the kill. And, you know, I think back to that flag on Bradberry during the Super Bowl. Like, are you calling that, you know, anyway, it's just, it really puts the refs hands on into the game, and I hate to see it, and you've seen it across all the series. I mean, the refs, I would rather just call things that are very malicious, things that have maybe are going to dictate the play. But yeah, when you're calling these chintzy penalties that, you know, are kind of 50-50 calls, I hate it, and I hate that they're doing it. But yeah, I mean, it's been controversy. I mean, in the next series we get into to talk about the Edmonton series. I mean, you know, going into both overtimes in game two and three, you know, on the penalty kill. I mean, it's just tough to see. You know, you want these penalties to be extremely malicious and definitely to be earned. But when you're calling these chintzy penalties that are kind of like, I'm not sure if that was, you're putting too much, hands on in the game. So. You know, going back to the Foligno penalty, I'm not calling that, but you know what? It is what it is. I mean, you kind of have to, you gotta roll with the punches but yeah, like I said, I'm more of a proponent to put the whistles away and if it's a malicious call, call it. But if not, then let the boys play.
No, I completely agree. And you, like, especially in a series, like I said, with this one, like, they're low scoring affairs, they're absolute wars. You know what? Those two teams want to play a gritty, hard game. You got to call the penalty when it's there, if it's obviously a point blank. But, like, hey, I mean, going forward, obviously we hope it's going to be better. But, I mean, we'll talk about the next series. I mean, we're getting right into it here. But, like, the power plays are so good for every team in the playoffs now that it's not like you're calling a penalty in the regular season where, yeah, like, it could be a bottom team and the games don't mean as much. It's just so imperative. But. Yeah, here's what it is. 2-2 series. Absolute war, and I think we both had it going 7 or 6, so no surprise there. So,
speaking of another war, the Edmonton Oilers and Los Angeles Kings have been an absolute war. Controversy, obviously, in Game 3, the Kings get it done in overtime. Gabriel Vilardi was at high stick. Who knows? But another overtime game, and then down 3-0 in Game 4. I mean, I'm going to bed going, this thing might be over. Like, I am going to look like a complete idiot for picking Edmonton, but I woke up this morning and they battled back a huge second period. And obviously, to get it into overtime, Zach Hyman, the hero, Edmonton, going back home, tied 2-2, probably feeling pretty good about themselves, but this is just an absolute war out there. Been phenomenal. Leon Draisaitl, I mean, this guy is the playoff king right now. Just having an incredible series. David with 3 assists. I mean, I'm hoping Edmonton gets this done because I want to see them go on and I want to see what these guys can do in a second round series. But, I mean, what a series we have going here, Justin.
Yeah, unbelievable. I got quite a bit here, so we're going to have some back and forth talking through this series. But start off, I completely agree with the Draisaitl. I mean, 9 points and we're 4 games into the series. Like, this is unbelievable. I mean, but for me, because we could talk about Jad all day, and we have. So moving forward on a guy that, for me, has been an X factor for this Oilers team, obviously outside McDavid, Bouchard. Bouchard has 7 points in this series, 5 in the last 2 games. He's an absolute mastermind on the power play. I mean, I know he's got a great power play around him, but I feel like he gets probably the most touches out of anyone on that power play. And he's got Jordan McDavid on it. Like, he is a huge part of this team. Absolute rocket.
Of a shot.
Absolute rocket of a shot. It's unbelievable. Like, he is a huge, huge factor in the sense of what reminds me of John Carlson on Washington, where people talk about Backstrom, obviously Ovechkin on the 1T, Oshies, etc. But then you just, if you have this absolute stud on the blue line at the top of the power play, how do you defend that? Like, that's what this team has, and they found it with Bouchard. So he's absolutely imperative to me. He's been unbelievable. But on the flip side, as I talk about Bouchard, Ekholm's been great as well. Darnell Nurse and Desharnais, are you absolutely kidding me? The first period, the 3 goals against, this was unbelievable. I don't know how they stepped on the ice the rest of the game. These goals were so, they were so lost. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Desharnais is massive. Takes up a lot of ice. Other than that, I don't know what is the reasoning for all of his ice time. Because these Kings goals, they had some great shots, etc., but they were all absolute lapses from Nurse and Desharnais giving them up. And I just didn't see what Desharnais and Nurse brought to the game on the positive side, even after that, when they ended up coming back and winning. But, man, like, they again, there's getting scored on, and then there's absolutely looking lost and creating the goal, but... it was unbelievable,
man. I've got a few things to comment here. So we'll move back to the Evan Bouchard. I mean, he's looked absolutely incredible. And I think that trading Tyson Barry at the deadline kind of gives that guy a little bit more confidence, mm-hmm. because now you don't have another right-handed defenseman in the lineup who is another offensive guy, is running the power play. Now it's on you. And now you've got a guy that you can play with in Matthias Ekholm, who's just so sound defensively, can really be your rock, let you free up a little bit. Man, it's been such a great addition. Those two look fantastic. And then Darnell Nurse. I mean, I'm going to come out and say this. Darnell Nurse is probably the most overpaid player in the NHL. I mean, making $9.5 million, I mean, this is just absolutely ridiculous. And this guy, I mean, he's a liability at times. He makes some stupid decisions defensively, and he needs to step up. I mean, there's just no two ways around it. You've got to be better, especially too when you're making that type of money and you're expected to be such a rock on that blue line for the Edmonton Oilers. I do think the Oilers win this series, but they need just a more collective effort defensively to get through this, because you're not worried about the offense. You're not worried about getting things done up front. You got to hold things down in the, especially in front of Stuart Skinner, and you need more than just Bouchard and Ekholm doing it. So, I'm excited, man. This is an incredible series, but I'm all over Edmonton to get this done. I'm not wavering in my pick there. I think they get this done at home, and they either get it done in LA or they get it done in 7. How you feeling about that?
Yeah, I got 2 or 3 things here that just make me a little hesitant. I'm on Oilers, and I want Oilers to win probably more than any team in the playoffs left. In terms of winning round one. First things first is Jack Campbell. And the word described for Jack Campbell is that he looks like a road hockey goalie. And that's what was being talked about here watching these games. Like, this guy's everywhere. And you can't feel confident. You could not feel confident when he came in the net. He's had a bad regular season, is an understatement. But he just plays a game that is just so flying everywhere that, like you just mentioned, the offense is going to be there for the Oilers. All you need is to be sound, keep the puck out of your net, and they're so far from it. Like, if Stuart Skinner was a massive piece of, like, okay, we have a competent goalie, you could trust the Oilers here. It's not the case now that we have Campbell or Skinner, we don't know who's going. Like, if I'm the coach, I'm going back to Skinner. I really am. I know he got pulled, but I think it's a situation where, okay, we took you out, you watched the rest of the game, they came back, but we're going to give you another chance to settle back in. That's first things first. The second thing for me is it feels like there's more to be desired from the likes of Nugent Hopkins, Hyman, who scored the goal late, and then the depth below this roster. Like, Evander Kane, Drysdale, and McDavid, 5-on-5, have really been the only 3 guys that are creating grade A opportunities. The first 2 periods, there was nothing from the Oilers that looked like they could score 4 goals on Korpisalo. So until those guys 5-on-5 start producing at a higher clip and take the tempo up a notch, it's going to be tough to say that the Oilers are going to easily win, but I'm leaning that way. And the final thing is that the Oilers are so dependent on the power play. Like, that is concerning. As much as, like, we can look at this game, they came back and they wanted it overtime. That's great. Now we're 2-2. We're going back to Edmonton. Happy-go-lucky. The Oilers got this thing. They are so dependent on that power play that, one, if they get stopped on the power play, still not scoring 5-on-5, we're in trouble. If, say, LA Kings figure it out on the PK. The second thing is if LA just don't take penalties late or in overtime, again, we're in trouble. I'm almost certain that Oilers were the number one power play ever this year.
Yeah.
But Kings were number two or three. So I'm going to lean that the X factor of this series going forward here is what team takes less penalties. That's what I think is going to come down to. So those are a couple things that are concerning to me. But I think Edmonton has enough to get done. I really do. And I think this was a massive win going back to Edmonton. So, we'll have to see moving forward. But I'm going to take Edmonton, and I'm going to take them in six. I think they win it in Edmonton, and I think they go in L.A. and they get the job done. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I have to think that these guys are riding high. You know, spotting a team on the road, down 2-1 in the series, spotting them 3 goals, and then coming back and winning. I mean, that's got to put a nice jolt into the locker room. And, yeah, hopefully they can figure things out in between the pipes. It'll be interesting to see who they go with. And, I mean, obviously the Kings have the upper edge in between the pipes, but excited to see how that series goes. Let's move into the Colorado Avalanche, Seattle Kraken. Seattle comes out absolutely flying. Obviously, we know that this series was tied heading to Seattle, and they get the first goal, and that building is rocking and rolling. The Avs end up getting it done, though, in Game 3, end up winning 6-4. It's been the big guns for Colorado, the Rantanen, the McKinnon, the Makar show in Game 3. I don't think the Kraken can win this series, but they are proving a lot of hockey fans that these guys deserve to be there and that they could potentially get it done. So, I mean, I'm feeling Avalanche, and I still think the Avalanche could get this done in 5 or 6, but these aren't the Colorado Avalanche of 2022. You know what? It's been a great series. It's been fun hockey to watch. What are you thinking in this one, Justin?
No, I completely agree. There's not much here for me. I mean, Avalanche are the better side. I mean, this Seattle team was a team that we pegged that could get a game, maybe two games, and I think we were both a little bit hesitant on them getting two games, but honestly, good for them. Like, this is a good showing. The last thing you wanted to do as Seattle was make your first playoffs, make that noise. People are obviously high on you, like happy for you, first playoff appearance as a franchise, and then go out there and get swept or get cranked every game. And you know what I mean? So, you can't be upset with Seattle. They're keeping these games a little bit close. I mean, the last one a little bit got away, letting in six, but every other game's been kind of right there, and it hasn't been something where anyone's saying, oh, Seattle's garbage, how'd they get in? So, like, yeah, good showing. I think, obviously, a lot of positives for the Seattle team moving forward. I mean, the series isn't done, I suppose, obviously, but I think this is something where this Avs team needs to get it done as soon as possible. I feel like with the injuries they have, obviously, like Landeskog and stuff, and Makar was dealing with injuries through the regular season. You want to get this done ASAP and have that rest. Again, those are things that sometimes get overlooked in these series for casual viewers. But, man, you get a series done in 4 or 5 and you're playing a team that went 6 or 7. That's a major advantage. And the winner of this series, I believe, is it Vegas? And no, it's Dallas and Wild. And we just talked about that series going the distance and how much of a war it is. So,
yeah.
For me, Avs winning round two is big on getting this series done ASAP, and I think they can do that.
Yeah, I agree. And it is worth noting, too, Valerie Nichushkin has left the team for personal reasons, and he's another big, strong forward who has played very well for the Colorado Avalanche. Guy's had a roller coaster of the last few years. I mean, even leaving the league, going to the KHL for a season, but, you know, he's been fantastic, so hopefully they can get him back soon. And then finally, the Winnipeg Jets versus the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, you want to talk about an unbelievable hockey game leading into the Leafs and Lightning on Saturday night. We got the Winnipeg Jets and Golden Knights. The Knights up 4-1 in the third period. The Jets battle back, make it a 4-3 game, pull the goaltender, score. Unbelievable. It was just an incredible, incredible moment for the building in Winnipeg. But it all means nothing if you can't get it done in overtime, which they couldn't. It goes to double overtime. Michael Amadio, a guy, just a bit of a no-name on the Vegas Golden Knights. He's kind of bounced around the league a little bit, scores for them in double overtime. They go back tonight to Winnipeg. Vegas up 2-1. This is a fantastic series, man. And I think regardless of the outcome in that, I think the Jets do get a little bit of confidence from that. Obviously, you don't win the game, but anytime you climb out of a huge deficit like that in the playoffs, I think the belief is there. You know, being down a couple, being down the first goal, I think it still keeps the belief in the group. A massive game. We've got three huge hockey games tonight, and this is the third. So I'm excited for this one. Justin, are you leaning any way in terms of this is a must win for Winnipeg, obviously at home. I hope they can get it done because I do want this series to go the distance. But what are you thinking here?
Yeah, I'm leaning Vegas, and it's one reason, and I think we have to talk about is Morrissey's out for the series. Josh Morrissey's out for the series. He's a top three Norris defenseman finalist this year. Absolute X factor for them. He's definitely the leader of that group on the back end. That's a tough blow. And the reason I think it's so big is that the advantage that the Jets have in this series is goaltending and keeping the puck out of the net with the Hellebuck, obviously with Thompson hurt for Vegas, so they're playing their third with Brossoit. But when you lose your best D-man, does that kind of even it out a little bit more? Like for me, I mean, I think Vegas is a better offense. So when you're losing such a big piece on the blue line, that's tough for me, and they're up in the series. So for me, that's where I lean Vegas. I think Eichel's humming. He had two goals and assists, so that's huge for getting a guy that's so talented into the series in such a big way. It's going to be tough for me to say that I think the Jets can take the series over. Do they maybe win the next game and tie the series up? Possibly. But even then, I really do think that this is going to be Vegas in the end because of that Norris injury. That's such a big injury for the Jets to have at this time of the year.
It's massive. Yeah, it could be a critical loss for sure. A lot of Neil Pionk will be kind of the guy taking the brunt of the offense and the puck handling on the defensive course. So we'll see how that goes for them. But exciting hockey. It's been fantastic. Obviously, we'll come Friday with some updates on those series, but going to be just incredible viewership through this week as well in the first rounds of the NHL. But let's move into quarter two here, Justin. We've got some NBA basketball to talk about. We'll start things off in the Eastern Conference with the 76ers really not really having too much trouble with the Brooklyn Nets. And I think that was a nice matchup for them to draw in the first round. Just completely out-talented them. They now await the winner of the Boston-Atlanta series. I got a few things here. So obviously we know it was a sweep, but should Joel Embiid have been kicked out of game three? I'm not sure if you saw the highlight. Nick Claxton's kind of, over top of him. Joel Embiid, it looks like he kind of takes a swipe at his family jewels, kind of gives him a kick and gets a flagrant. No, he doesn't get ejected from the game. How'd you feel about that play? I mean, it wasn't really much of a series, but how you feeling about the Sixers sweep over the Nets?
Yeah, just quickly on Embiid, and it kind of goes to Draymond, too. I have trouble with these NBA guys making plays like that, maybe some cheap shots, dirty play. Like, you don't play a game that's particularly that fast, that's hard to analyze video replay
100%.
In slow motion, etc. Like, these guys, I feel like they're trying to get away with stuff where it's like, man, we could, like, this is very easy to break down what happened. You're not playing hockey where it's 100 miles an hour, or NFL where collisions happen in a split second, etc. Like, this is a pretty simple thing to figure out. But in terms of the series, telling for me that they won that last game without Embiid, who obviously sat out, he was resting his knee there. So that for me is telling. You like to see that they're not that reliant on Embiid. I know it's just the Nets, and they're going to play the Celtics here in round two, and you can't – obviously it's not going to be the same case. But, not much more to say. I mean, this is a team that should have swept them, so obviously if you're – on the 76ers in this playoff run, you love to see it. And I just said it with the Avalanche, getting that done in a sweep, having time to rest, especially with these NBA guys and all the injuries they have all the time. This is huge. This is huge. And Embiid's had injuries going forward in playoffs in the past. So going forward, this is massive for him. So, I'm sure we'll get into a breakdown of the 76ers Celtics series when that time comes, but not much more to say. Got the job done, and they should have.
Tyrese Maxey, that guy doesn't get enough love, man. Phenomenal for the 76ers. A couple 30 pieces during the series has been phenomenal. Let's move on to the Celtics-Hawks series. Obviously, in Game 3, the Celtics couldn't get it done in sweeping fashion, so they do get Game 4 done. I mean, it was the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum show in Game 4. It was the Trae Young and DeJounte Murray show in Game 3. I mean, both of the superstars for both of those teams are playing very high-level basketball, but it's going to be interesting. At the end of Game 4, DeJounte Murray kind of bumps into the ref. He's screaming something at him, so is there going to be some discipline on DeJounte Murray? Are they going to, the Hawks going to be going to Boston for Game 5 without their kind of secondary superstar? We'll see. But I do think the Celtics get this done at home to in five games. And like was said, I think we'll be kind of previewing the Boston Celtics 76ers in a few days' time.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when you have Trae Young scoring 35, getting 15 assists, and you're losing games, I mean, that just shows the talent on the Celtics. I mean, 31 points each from Tatum and Brown is ridiculous. Williams in the middle, maybe one of the more underrated players in this playoffs. 13 points, 15 rebounds. Great defensively. He's an anchor down the middle for them. Like, he's underrated, and this Celtics team's for real. I know that's not a surprise to many people. So they should get it done in five. I think it'd be frustrating to not get it done in five again with that rest factor, but they seem to be a lot healthier and they've been able to play through some of that thing, so I don't think it's too big of a deal. But yeah, this is again just better team winning in round one.
Are Boston sports fans the most spoiled sports fans in the entirety of North American professional sports? I would have to argue probably.
I mean, I think absolutely, right? I mean, it's been, especially in the last, 20, 25 years, it's unbelievable.
It's outrageous.
It's unbelievable.
It's outrageous. I know. It's.
You just finished having the 08 win for the Celtics.
Yeah.
With Pierce, Garnett, et cetera. And the amount of teams and franchises, me as a Sabres fan, would dream to, 10 years later, or 13 years later, you're already the number one contender for the championship. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. You got 9 Super Bowl appearances for the Patriots, 6 championships. You got 3 Stanley Cup appearances for the Boston Bruins, a championship. I mean, the Red Sox have won in that time frame, I think 3 championships, maybe 2. And I know 18, go ahead.
The Bruins just set the regular season record while the Celtics are the favorite for the NBA. Like what are we talking? It's unbelievable.
It's outrageous. It's so outrageous. but moving into the Milwaukee Bucks Miami Heat series, we saw that the depth of Milwaukee Bucks kept them in the series here. Win game 2, they go down to Miami and pretty much get dusted in game 3. So we got the Miami Heat, obviously in surprising fashion, up 2-1. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Just a butchering of the pronunciation there. He's been injured in game 2 and 3. He's a game time decision for game 4. But obviously, this Milwaukee Bucks—they're just nowhere near the team they are. They can be without Giannis. So I'm just thinking, if he returns, Milwaukee takes care of it. If he still remains out, they are in some hot water here, because if Miami goes up 3-1. This is going to be tough for the Milwaukee Bucks on the ropes. And like you said last episode, if Giannis comes back at, 70%, is he the same as 100%? Because obviously there's a lot of question marks around, where he sits and how his injury, how he's dealing with his injury. But, surprising right now that the Heat are up 2-1 and Milwaukee's in a little bit of trouble here.
And here's the question I have for you with Giannis' injury. So you got a guy doubtful. Through the series, he's obviously missed 2 games. You're down 2-1 in the series, Kev. With the ability Giannis has, stepping back into this game at 100%, do you feel like you could win down 3-1, yes or no?
100%, you could. Yeah, could for sure.
So my question goes, is he close to returning to the point that they said, you're not going to play next game because we know if you're supposed to be back in, say, a week. We might be down 3-1. We might be tied 2-2, what have you. We could win 3 straight games against this Heat team if need be. Do we think that's a possibility of where he is with his injury? Or do we think this is something where if he plays again here, he's playing through something he normally wouldn't?
Yeah, I think if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks, I'm gonna sit him out for game four. I know he's a game time decision, but I'm sitting him out because we did see in game two that you can get Middleton hot, that Brook Lopez can play at a high level, that Bobby Portis can come off the bench and show some stuff. So I do think that this Bucks team can win without Giannis. Obviously, the odds aren't likely, but they can. We've seen it. So I would hold him out one more, and then if they're on the brink, then Giannis gets, you know, a few more days rest, a few more days to recover. You know, obviously this is the world-class recovery when we're talking about professional sports. So, you know, whatever he needs to do to get ready for, you know, three games in a row where you're going to be on the ropes, I do think that that they should hold him out. But we'll see. We'll see how they feel. That'll be interesting tonight. But obviously the Miami Heat up 2-1. Just finally here, Justin looking like a genius here was all over the Knicks. I was on the Cavs. The Knicks up 3-1. The Stars of Cleveland, I think it's a story here that Darius Garland and why can't I think of Donovan Mitchell haven't been, you know, they haven't been superstars. You know, you expect Donovan Mitchell to be, you know, just a scoring machine, and Darius Garland went 4 for, you know, I think like 21 in game three. They just haven't looked fantastic, and the Knicks are getting it from, you know, everywhere. So, I mean, you know, it could be Julius Randle. It could be RJ Barrett, Canadian boy. It could be Jalen Brunson. So they're just, you know, going with depth, grinding away, and they are just playing super defensive basketball, and they find themselves up 3-1, and it's obviously exciting for Knicks fans because it's been a long time since we've seen a nice run from the New York Knicks.
Absolutely. I just have three things quick on this series before moving forward. Obviously, Knicks up 3-1. That comes for me. I tuned into this full game. RJ Barrett absolutely stepping up last game. 26 points. He was finishing everything at the rim. Contact and all. And that's absolutely massive when a guy like Julius Randle goes 3-for-10 shooting and got benched. And obviously that's something where you could win a game like they did against Cleveland with Randle getting benched and not being able to perform. That speaks volumes to the depth of this team. They have a guy like Obi Toppin coming off the bench with 5 offensive rebounds. That completely changed the tide in what was a one-score game majority of the game. Josh Hart scores 19 points but picks up 7 rebounds. And he's kind of doing it all for this team, too.
Beast.
Another energizer kind of guy.
Beast. Yep.
And then your leader still remains Jalen Brunson, who's an absolute torch. And this guy could get hot, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I really like what I see from the Knicks team. And Robinson had a bunch of offensive rebounds as well, 7 or 8. Like, they get those second-chance opportunities. They play a gritty game. And you can't completely give New York Knicks all the praise. Donovan Mitchell couldn't hit water if he was standing on a boat in the second half of this game. Like, that's obviously not going to be something you see every single game going forward, but credit to this Knicks team, man, because they showed their depth. They're playing as a team really well. I think they have this series done. I think Cleveland could grab another game, but I think this series is all but over.
I always enjoy. I shouldn't say enjoy. I'm always just in shock when, say, a guy like Donovan Mitchell is having a tough game, and even like a guy like Steph Curry having a tough game, like, they have the confidence to really shoot from anywhere and to shoot on any offensive possession. Like, they could just pull up at any point in time. And when they're cold, it looks so obnoxious. Donovan Mitchell's a perfect example. Well, you're watching the Cavs, and this guy is just heaving up brick after brick after brick. And it's just, obviously, it's not his night, but clearly, you know, it's, with a guy has a ceiling of 70 points, you know, you're going to let him, you know, take his and pick and choose his shots, but it looks like a bit of a comedy act when he's having a cold game. But obviously a huge series for the Knicks. They're up. And like you said, I mean, Josh Hart, what an acquisition that was at the deadline, bringing in the Villanova teammates to join Jalen Brunson. And you love seeing RJ Barrett, who has had a very inconsistent season, playing well. Yeah. Let's move out west. The Denver Nuggets. We thought it was going to be a formality of a sweep. Obviously last night, the Timberwolves get it done. I think this just pushes it one more game. They're going to get it done in Denver. Obviously, we talked about it last episode about how bullish we are on the Denver Nuggets. They're such a phenomenal team. I think we'll just go quickly here. Is Denver going to get this done in 5? This series is over, isn't it?
Yeah, there's only two things here. Anthony Edwards basically just won them one extra game.
Yep.
Even when Nuggets go on a 12-0 run at the end of the game to tie it. Honestly, this is Minnesota just bought themselves an extra flight to Denver.
Yep.
That's really what it is.
The owner's pissed. The owner's pissed.
Yeah, he's got a couple extra dollars out of his pocket for an extra 2 days?
For the PJ. So. For the PJ and hotel.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, credit to the Nuggets owner. Their team comes home and they get a few extra home tickets purchased. So, I mean, you know what? Everyone
strategic business moves.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But yeah, one extra game, not much more to say. Absolutely. Series is over. Yeah.
And then we move into Golden State, and obviously Sacramento was riding high up 2-0 heading into Golden State. Man, Golden State did a lot of things at the end of this game to potentially push this to overtime, but now we're tied 2-2 heading back to Sacramento. And I mean, Golden State, credit to them, obviously found a way to win two games at home, but they're going to have to get over these road scares if they plan on moving on in this playoffs. I mean, it's just been an unbelievably terrible scene for the Golden State Warriors on the road this season, and they're going to have to go back into Sacramento, but it is all tied up, and I don't know how you feeling about this, moving back to Sacramento. I'm going to lean Sacramento just because Golden State is terrible on the road, and they've got to find a way to win one on the road, whether it's in Game 5 or Game 7, to win this series. How are you feeling about this moving forward?
Yeah, so obviously, you're asking how I'm feeling. I'm someone who led off this playoff run by calling the Sacramento Kings as a 3 seeds. I think the word I used was frauds, and I think I used it pretty heavily.
Yeah.
I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong. You have to soak it. As much as Golden State tied this series up, and before we talk about the issues on the road, at home in this game that they just won by 1 point, they were up by, I believe, 6, 8, 10-ish, somewhere in that margin, and the Kings storm back, make it a game. Second of all, 3 players for Golden State scored 20, Curry, Poole, and Clay. Wiggins has 18 points, whatever, 8 rebounds, 9 rebounds, what have you. And Looney and Draymond Green were right around a triple-double. Okay, and you won the game by 1 point. So you got what you needed from every player on your starting 5 or 6, and you still only win this game by 1, where at home, where you're, that's where you're dominant at home. That's not I'm not confident. I am not confident. I'm not confident in the fact that Sacramento wins on the road. They don't get it done in Golden State. Like, I could see that happening where Kings get this done in 6 here. De'Aaron Fox is an absolute menace.
Freak.
Absolute menace. Unbelievable. 39, 40 points and like 10 and 6, 10 and 5, whatever it is. This guy is showing no remorse. I absolutely love it because he just goes. He wants to win. He wants to be a stud. And I'm leaning. I think I'm going to have to jump with you and lean on Sacramento taking this series because Golden State have a lot of things that they're doing that almost don't show their experience. That's the weirdest thing for me.
Yeah, this might be a terrible comparison for a lot of NBA fans, but what De'Aaron Fox looks like when he drives, and he looks like a prime James Harden to me, where it's just like, if he chooses to drive the basket, it's in the hoop. Like, he just finds a way to score, and they're just such prolific scorers. It's really fun to watch, and it's really hard to stop. But yeah, this is going to be an exciting series. All square, moving to Sacramento. Let's move into the Los Angeles Lakers Memphis Grizzlies series here. Obviously, after game 2, we heard the Dylan Brooks comments. You know, how is he going to back it up? What's LeBron going to respond? Well, Dylan Brooks, he backs it up by getting ejected in the second quarter. He finds himself hitting the showers early. The Lakers win game 3 at home. Ja Morant, I mean, goes bananas and still can't get it done. Big game 4 tonight. How are you feeling about this? I mean, you were on the Lakers. I was on the Grizzlies. I'm feeling good about your Lakers picks.
Yeah.
Your Lakers pick, obviously a huge game 3 win at home. Can they get it and pretty much put them on the brink here tonight?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Dylan Brooks thing, he gets kicked out, but he's talking all that smack to LeBron. And you know what? You got to shoot 3 for 13 before you get kicked out. And then you're gonna be swinging at a man's grundle. It's just unbelievable that this guy has the audacity to say a word to a guy like LeBron. Like, I feel like this is something we could see with a guy like Draymond Green and Dylan Brooks.
Yeah,
are you doing this against LeBron? And you know what? Maybe the Grizzlies said to themselves, "Hey, we need you to try to throw LeBron off." But it's never worked. Never worked. Like Lance Stephenson, these guys. Like, it's been done before, and it gives LeBron more fire to just go at you guys. So it's something where, like I said it with the Atlanta series, you have Morant scoring 40 plus with double digit assists and you're losing games. Like, it's going to be tough. And Lakers, but then again, Lakers, like, record first quarter, 35-9. They won that first quarter, but they only win by 10 points. It could have been just something where they were up so much that, hey, Grizzlies trickled back in. I wasn't really concerned most of the game about it, but yeah, I think Lakers get this series done. But who knows? Maybe this is a back and forth series that just ends up going 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, and it stretches longer than we think.
Like, what are the comparisons of other sports? Like, I feel like, so obviously, like, maybe somebody just chirping the wheels off Sidney Crosby would be a comparison yeah. in hockey. And then in the NFL, like, you know, you'd have to say, like, maybe Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady, maybe, like, as he was yeah. playing, like, somebody just getting it into it with Tom. Like, I know Tom's, like, the renowned GOAT, and LeBron, you know, there's a yeah. there's an argument that you can make. But it's just, it seems just so outrageous to me that the greatest player in that sport currently is just getting trashed by this guy, and not, it's not really being blown out of proportion. Like, I think if that happened in other sports, there'd be way more attention being like, what the F is this guy going on about? This is, that's Sidney Crosby. That's Tom Brady. That's LeBron yeah. James you're talking about. I don't need to respect that guy. Is this line? It's like, what?
I think you're right. I think maybe the comparison for hockey is Tom Wilson going at Sidney Crosby, maybe in that Washington Penguins rivalry.
True.
But like, where Sid's just obviously way more dominant. But I think you're absolutely right where there's attention to this in the media, but it's also not something where people are freaking out because he's not backing it up. He's shooting 3-13. Like, he's making himself yeah. look like a clown doing this. Yeah. Where if this was something where Durant or like a Trae Young did with the Knicks last year, he's the one going at the
puts
LeBron
up a 50
and then he's
piece.
Dropping 45 yeah. and winning. Like, that's something.
Yeah.
But it's, oh, okay. Brooksy, relax with the comments. 13, bud, you got kicked out again. Like, what are we doing? Like, at this point, anything he says moving forward just almost becomes annoying, I think, for most of the media and fans.
Well, it's like, Dylan, zero all-star appearances, zero all team, zero rings, zero. Like, you got goose eggs, you got donuts across the board statistically in every meaningful. And then you look at LeBron, and he's got the full package of hardware in his truck. Like, take it easy, take a step back. Anyway, it's a bit ridiculous. Just finally here in the NBA before we move into the halftime show here, Justin. So the Phoenix Suns, obviously, the Clippers are. They're dealing with no Kawhi Leonard, no Paul George. I mean, when you're rolling out that lineup with all your two superstars, it's going to be challenging. The Phoenix Suns up 3-1. It's pretty much a formality at this point. The Suns are moving on, and I think we'll look back at just Kawhi Leonard can't stay healthy. And Paul yeah. George being out, I mean, that's just a huge shot to your roster. And I think that would have been both rosters fully healthy. That would have been a hell of a series.
Yeah, And I just want to bring this up quick. Maybe I'll throw it in the Chalkboard app. Again, people get in the Chalkboard app, have these conversations with us and the listeners. Talking about these injuries with Kawhi, Paul George. In the Knicks game, Van Gundy on the broadcast brought up a stat. He said it himself in the game. He goes, I think the numbers were 6 NBA players have played all 82 games in this NBA season. 116 NHL players have played all 82 games in the NHL. And the question I ask isn't to take one league down, whatever. What can the NBA do? Maybe scheduling, maybe the amount of games, maybe playoff like lengths. Well, like, what? I don't know. Maybe start the season earlier so it's longer. There's more. Like, what can they do to get more guys playing more games? Like, that's what I want to know, because I know they changed the rule for the NBA awards where you have to play a certain amount of
65
teams games. Yeah.
Yeah,
but what if you're like, what about these guys who aren't going to be in any of these award races? Like, what if Steph Curry just isn't in the top three for MVP at All-Star break, and he knows that, but he's still obviously a phenomenal player. But sometimes you know, right? Like Jokic, Embiid, whatever. He no longer has that incentive to play 65 games, yeah. and he could be sitting out 5 of the last games because his team's like. We'll have the conversation maybe the Chalkboard. People get in the Chalkboard for more, but. This, yeah, there isn't much to say here. Book and KD took off, just 30 points each. Unbelievable, and you're not going to stop that without Kawhi and Paul George. So, again, this is a matter for the Suns. Get this done as quick as you can. Get that rest and be ready to go up against the Nuggets team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That I love that stat, too. That'll be on socials. We'll post that clip. I mean, clearly we know that hockey players are a little bit more durable, you know, maybe play through a little bit more. Yeah. But I think as an NBA, I mean, that is – definitely the biggest issue right now is getting their superstars. And it's not only, you know, for, you know, teams and their success. I mean, the fans, the people that are paying yeah. hundreds of dollars to go watch these superstars sit on the bench. It's just a little ridiculous. But obviously that's a lot to get into with the NHL and NBA being in their first, we've got 16 series to talk about, and it's just, it's a lot going on. So obviously the first halves of these episodes are going to be long, but let's get into the halftime show, and then obviously we'll buzz through the MLB. We've got a little bit of a miscellaneous quarter with just some briefing out of the PGA Tour, LPGA, UFC, and then just obviously there was some boxing fights on the weekend, or one in particular. But let's move into the halftime show, Justin. It is who holds the record. So obviously the listeners can play along with this one. I'm starting things off here, and I'm going to send you who has the most touchdown receptions in NFL history.
Most touchdown receptions, NFL history. Wow. I'm going to go with, is it the GOAT Jerry Rice?
Bang. Yep. Jerry Rice. That's one for one.
Come on.
That's one for one. Okay, we're moving on. Who has the most hits in MLB history?
Pete Rose.
Bam.
Come on.
Bam, that's light work. The guy's not in the MLB Hall of Fame. Joke. Anyway, all right, moving on. I know he was a gambler, but he never gambled on the Reds. So, allegedly. Anyway, this one's going to be interesting here. Most dunks in NBA history.
Most dunks in NBA history. I'm going to go with LeBron for how long he's been in the league.
Nope.
Big man in the middle, maybe Shaq.
Number two.
Most dunks all time. Do I got to go older than Shaq or no?
No, younger than Shaq.
Shaq, most dunks all time.
He's playing in Taiwan.
I don't got much.
He's playing in Taiwan currently.
It's not DeAndre Jordan.
No.
In Taiwan right now. Tell me it. Yeah, I got nothing.
I'll give you another hint. Superman. Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard in Taiwan. He was the man in Orlando.
Oh, 100%, man. He could throw it down. I was super surprised it wasn't Shaq when I looked that up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was going Shaq all day long.
Unreal. All right, I got three for you.
Okay.
And I got two NHL here with NHL playoffs going on. So yep. Here we go. All right, career overtime goals.
Wow, in the playoffs or just total?
No, total.
Wayne. Gordie Howe.
A lot younger.
Sidney Crosby.
Second. He's second.
Still young, like same age?
Right era.
Wow. Overtime goals. Gosh, Zetterberg, Datsyuk?
Ovechkin.
Ovechkin. I love it. I probably should have known that, but all right.
All right, here we go. Career shootout goals leader, NHL.
Career shootout goals. I wonder how long have they been doing the shootout? I'll go Datsyuk.
Nope, but it's a good one. Good guess, actually.
Okay. So obviously it's like a recent,
more modern, obviously. Yeah.
More modern. Yeah. Gosh, who has just been money in the shootout? Do I know this? Is he a superstar?
Absolutely.
Okay.
He's a superstar, I'd say. Kind of borderline maybe, but
Kuznetsov.
Nope.
Shootout leader in goals. I'll go one more guess here. Give me the division.
He's in the West, but he won't be next year. He'll be done playing.
He's in the West. He's gonna be done playing. Wow. Kopitar?
No. Johnny T, the captain, Tays.
Wow. That's a good hint, too. That's a whiff. Jonathan Toews, most shootout goals. He was a freak in one of the Olympics, or was it the World Juniors where they kept rolling them?
World Juniors, he went 3 in a row, I want to say. Unreal.
Wow.
All right, I got one more question, one more record for you.
Let's do it.
We're going to, outside LeBron, LeBron's one for obvious reasons, longevity, but what single NBA player has the most playoff wins?
Wow, that's a good question. Tim Duncan?
He's three.
Bill Russell.
The guy. No.
Hmm.
It's a good guess. But I think they played less games in each series, right?
True. Okay. Kobe?
This guy played with them.
Okay. Shaq?
No, they played, again, on this team. One more, maybe?
Fisher? Derek Fisher?
There you go.
Let's go.
161 wins.
Derek Fisher. That's insane.
Crazy.
That's a big guess, though. Wow. Okay. Well, there it is. Records at the halftime show. That's a good fun one. Little trivia action for you guys. Well, let's move into quarter three here in the MLB, Justin. Fernando Tatis Jr. finally back after a long layoff. His big suspension has looked okay, we'll say. He's hit a dinger. I think he's played four games, but he did kind of get back in action against the Diamondbacks, who, don't get me wrong, have played well. What have you seen from Fernando Tatis? I think the Padres are going to be a handful now because, you've got Bogaerts playing at a high level. This team is just juiced. So I'm expecting them to go on a little bit of a heater through these next 20, 30 games and to really, take a lead in this NL West. But, nice to see him back in the lineup.
No, I agree. I mean, I like it. I mean, that one where he, against the Astros, he shook off that pitch inside, went yard. I mean, He's going to be a problem. I mean, like I said, I wanted to see how he looked. It was the normal stuff of obviously coming in, working him back into the lineup, but that Padres team is going to be coming. And that was expected. This is a team that, if fully healthy, was always going to be one of the best rosters. So expect them to be in action late. Obviously, Tatis is going to have a long year and a lot of games to be ready for playoffs. And that's all that really matters in the MLB when you have a talented roster like this. So,
yep. Absolutely.
He's good for the game. I mean, obviously broke the rules, got suspended. Obviously not a big fan of that stuff, but he's good for the game. Another electric player back in lineups on a top team. So it can't be a bad thing for the MLB to have this guy swinging the bat again.
100%. And I did want to note 24 years ago last week, Fernando Tatis, his father, two grand slams in the same inning. Are you kidding me? Like, I don't even know how that happens, but what an incredible stat. So Fernando Tatis was in the media, and obviously Fernando Tatis Jr., he's back in action. Interesting story here, Drew Maggie. And this was a nice story for, if you're ever attempting to achieve something in life, or if you have a dream, don't quit. Don't stop chasing it. Because Drew Maggie, third baseman, was drafted in 2010 by the Pittsburgh Pirates, has played 13 years in the minors, bouncing around, grinding away. And finally, in 2023, after being drafted in 2010, he'll be dressing for the big club in Pittsburgh. So I'm not sure what type of action we'll see out of Drew Maggie, but incredible story there, Justin. Just a great testament to his perseverance. I mean, I'm rooting for him to get in that bat and to show his stuff in the bigs.
No, absolutely. I mean, insane. 33 years old. Like, that's unbelievable that he stuck with it for so long. You don't see that very often. So good for him. And you know what? I mean, this could be a good quick pivot. We talk about the Pirates, 16-7, seven game win streak. Like, this is a team I did not have being at the top of any standings. They obviously struggled in years past, so they got some good things going for them. Obviously, a good story like that as well. I wonder how much this guy's going to step into the lineup with a roster that's actually humming right now, so that's a bit interesting too. So, Pirates. We'll see if you guys can hang on. If there's any Pirates fans listening, let us know what you think, if this is just a hot start or not. But interesting, to say the least.
I hate to do this to the Pirates fans and the listeners, but so Justin, in the past, we did it with the Utah Jazz earlier this year in the NBA when they were at the top of the Western Conference standings. So it's called NatView Tour. So where we kind of take a peek at their schedule and we bet money line bets or spread bets against them for 10 straight games. And I'm starting to get an FU tour vibe from the Pittsburgh Pirates, but we'll wait and see. I think Archer dropped that like May 4th. Their schedule kind of starts to tighten up, so May 4th might be the puck drop of an FU tour of the Pittsburgh Pirates. But that's we'll wait on that to announce that.
Well, hey, to back you up here, who they've beaten in the seven game series have been series against the Reds and the Rockies. First of all, they have multiple wins against Cardinals and Red Sox here. So you know what I mean. I don't think that's going to be a bad decision to maybe be on the other side of them and expect them to come back down to earth. I think that's definitely what's going to happen.
For sure. So we'll keep you guys noted with when we're going to hop on the FU tour. But the Rangers outfielder, Adolis Garcia becomes the fourth player in the history of the MLB or the ALNL era to hit three home runs and two doubles in the same game. I was looking through the names. I didn't know one of them, but the other two names, Chris Bryant and Matt Carpenter. So some big names in the in the recent history of the MLB to hit three home runs and two doubles in a game. But that's exciting for the outfielder on the Texas Rangers, Adolis Garcia. Three dingers and two doubles in a game. Talk about feeling it.
Absolutely. I mean, this guy absolutely loving it for the stats this early in the year. God, games like that put you in such a good position. But yeah, they were bombs too. RBIs were up to, I think, eight in that game, something like that. Which is just phenomenal. So, I mean, this Rangers team's good. This Rangers team's good. And DeGrom had an absolute showing.
Yes, he did.
With 11 strikeouts. Like, this Rangers team, man, we talk about the Pirates. I don't think this team is one that you could, fade for too much. Cause I think they could be up there. I'm not sure they're going to be, sitting one and two very long, but I think they could have a playoff appearance for sure.
And DeGrom really silenced the media because his start prior, he left after four innings with a sore elbow, and you're like, oh no, here we go, because obviously he missed the majority of last season, but he comes back, and like you said, 11 Ks, just shut out baseball, so he looked really good. So the Rangers are loving it right now. The Jays hand the New York Yankees their first series loss of the season. Obviously exciting for Jays fans, and it goes kind of hand in hand. If you like the Jays, you probably don't like the New York Yankees. Obviously, Guerrero Jr. had a great series. But the AL East right now is an absolute bloodbath. Every single team right now above 500. You've got the Rays, who just don't seem to, they can't lose at home. They haven't lost at home. They're 13-0 at home right now, which is obviously just a record-setting team right now. You've got the Baltimore Orioles once again surprising people. Like, what are these guys all about? Are they going to come back to earth? Well, they didn't really until the end of the year last year, so it's going to be just a long, long season for this AL East, because it looks like all teams just know how to win ball games. I think it will sort things out as the season progresses, but right now, it is a bloodbath right now in the AL East.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at, okay, so you got Rays and Orioles at the top. They're on 5-game win streak and 6-game win streak. Their run differential for the Rays are still plus 88, which is absolutely insanity.
Yep.
But this division, like, Jays are third record. They're the only ones with a negative run differential. Like, this whole, the Red Sox have a plus 11 run differential. The Yankees have a plus 20 something. Like, this is going to be insane. I mean, it could be a situation where every team is like bottom two at some point, and every team might honestly find themselves top two at some point, as this is just going to keep flowing up and down the standings here based on who they play. The one thing that's exciting for the AL East for the rest of the year is, more than any other year, divisional series are going to be massive. It's going to be absolutely huge every time they play each other, because they seem to be beating the other teams if these stay consistent. So that'll be electric. Jays won the series 2-1 against the Yankees. Love to see it. Guerrero, obviously, with the big home runs there. And I look at the standings in the AL. Chapman still, and Bichette and Guerrero are all over all the hitting leaders for top five, which is absolutely insane. So I think you still feel good, obviously, as a Jays fan where you are. It's so early, but this is going to be a dogfight. This is really, and Orioles will be a problem if they actually stay in this playoff hunt for teams like the Jays and Yankees.
Absolutely. Oh man, it's exciting right now for AL East fans, which we both are, and we're excited for the moving forward. Like you said, I mean, all of these series, when we get, you know, Jays Red Sox, Yankees, Red Sox, Yankees, Jays. Whenever you get the combination of those five teams, it's going to be an exciting baseball series to watch. Very meaningful. Just finally in the MLB, Justin, in the pre-MLB kind of, projection show or preview show, I was all over Pete Alonso to win the home run race. Obviously, this guy knows how to mash baseballs. He's got 10 home runs through his first 22 games. And I know Max Muncy on the Dodgers has 11. But is there any chance that Pete Alonso, who we know mashes baseballs, can he hit that 60 number? Like, can he chase down Judge's season from last year? Because I'm kind of feeling like this is, if there's one guy to kind of get in the mix, it could be a guy like Pete Alonso, who, like I said, was what, third last year in home runs with 40 some. And this year,
he's been up there for a while.
Off to a 10 home run start in 20 games. I mean, come on now.
I mean, honestly, it's hard to say. Okay, where I think I would stand right now, I think he could absolutely lead the AL in home runs. I think that would have been a smart pick from the beginning, like you said. And I think that it remains a smart pick still. My issue with him chasing down 60 with Judge. Judge just got there at that end of the season last year, and he got 62, whatever. And he plays in Yankee Stadium every home game.
Yeah.
And that's the friendliest home run. So, like, for me, that's a bit of a concern. I'll say this. If Pete Alonso hits 60, that's a way more impressive season than Judge had last year. Because where he's doing it is absolutely a factor. It is in the MLB. But, yeah, if this guy stays healthy, Pete Alonso has shown for the last few years, like, this is possible out of him. And he's getting older, more experienced. So, like, yeah, we're hitting a peak here for the guy, and this would be in that peak and of what he's capable of doing. I think he leads the league I think he leads the AL in home runs right now. That's what he's showing. And I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I was all over that preseason, but as we get into it, the marathon continues. We'll have more news for you on the MLB front on Friday. But let's move into quarter four here, Justin. We got a lot of just kind of little headlines to go over. Obviously, it was the Zurich Classic this week on the PGA Tour, which, in all honesty, is a bit of a week off. You know, we had the Masters, we had the RBC Heritage. It was a lot of golf and a few kind of congested week, and then we get the Zurich Classic where it's a team event. I'm going to be completely honest. I watched zero. And I'm usually a huge golf guy. With the NBA and NHL playoffs, I didn't even check in on the golf. Nick Hardy, a rookie on tour, and Davis Riley, a sophomore on tour. That duo gets it done. They beat Canadian duo Hadwin and Nick Taylor. So congrats to those guys. Didn't check in on it much, but like I said, it's kind of a filler event where it's a different style of golf, and they get guys to team up. So, you know, congrats to Hardy and Riley there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there wasn't a ton of massive names there at the top, but yeah, you're great to get a win. Obviously, good for golf to get some new winners in whatever events we have. I don't really matter. I like the team events though. Team events are pretty electric lots of times. I like that they're adding them in, they're leaning into it, so it's pretty good.
Absolutely, and actually, later on this year, we'll have a LPGA PGA Tour event where the women will team up with the men, so I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. The LPGA had their first major this week, the Chevron Championship. Lilia Vu wins her first major, American, 25-year-old American. But the big question for us was, obviously we knew the tradition, was she going to jump in the water? And the answer is yes. She jumped in the water with her caddy. I'm proud of her. Obviously fresh water, there's gators, there's some exotic animals in that body of water. But she said, fuck it, and jumped in, and I love it.
You know what? You win a tournament. Maybe you don't have that mindset of what could go wrong. You're just on the high of winning, and you go right in for it. So, yeah, good for her. You love to see the tradition continue. That's actually so electric.
Yeah, I was fired up when I saw that she jumped in. So, congrats to her. Obviously, Brooke Henderson, our Canadian girl, my favorite LPGA golfer, was kind of in the mix after day two, but really struggled over the weekend there at the Chevron Championship. Just some big UFC announcements. Obviously, there's a lot of fights coming, but there's a fight coming to Canada in Vancouver, obviously. There'll be two massive fights. We'll have Charles Oliveira fighting, I forget his name, Belial, another contender, which will be really exciting there. And Amanda Nunes will fight as well in Canada. So that's exciting. So we got some big UFC fights around the corner. Justin, it's been a pleasure, my man. We got lots of hockey and basketball to catch up on this week. Everybody, make sure you're in the chalkboard app. Make sure you're subbed to the YouTube. Make sure you're on all the social pages. And something that's very important for Justin is make sure you leave a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify, wherever you're listening to the podcast, on YouTube. Share it with some friends, and let's keep plugging along here.
Love it. Great to have another episode. Let's go playoff sports. It's going to be another packed one. So make sure you tune in. Get in the chalkboard app and talk to us during every game. Fire up, Greg.
Let's go.